From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Friday, June 14th, and I am your host, Andy Klein. Gunashish, and thanks for joining the conversation. On today's show, Pretendians, we'll hear from the hosts of a Canada-based podcast that looks into and exposes the practices of co-opting native culture to build identity. There's some amazing examples of that, and we'll talk to them about that. A new multilingual library is now available online as an audio dictionary for understanding and pronouncing words in Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian languages. I used it today. It is really cool. We're going to be talking to folks from the Sealaska Heritage Institute all about it. And Moms Unhinged is a national night of stand-up comedy from the perspective of moms, and it is coming to Juno tonight. We're going to talk to the women of Moms Unhinged. There's also a bonus show, Nurses Off the Charts, and we're going to talk to them about that. It's going to be a fun day of conversations coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. And in the weather, it's looking like an awesome week ahead here in Juno. Predicted partly cloudy skies all the way through next Thursday with highs around 60 degrees. Going to be really cool. Get out there and enjoy the weather starting this afternoon.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Kliné-D have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. And we recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages, and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations.
Hansen Gress, Ka eat with the Shu Yi, we Kashuk a eat in. Jin Katka K Jin Tauk Anakaya Haanikak Gunish Cheesh.
Searching for the truth, searching for the truth in a world full of lies. Young poet, got no excuses, got no excuses, got no alibis. All we got left of you are these teardrops in our eyes. Earth in the sky, earth in the sky, the earth in the sky. Nothing lasts forever but the earth and the sky.
That's music from Buddy Tabor. That's a re-release of Earth and Sky. That's, of course, the title track of that. Buddy Tabor's music is coming out as re-releases as a special project. That is now uploaded and available on music services, all your favorite music services and feeding services. So that's Buddy Tabor, always revisiting that great, amazing talent, Buddy Tabor from Juneau, Alaska. Well, coming up right now, you're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Andy Klein, and we want to talk to the makers, producers, and hosts of a really interesting podcast that comes from Canada, and it's called Pretendians. And with me right now is Robert Jago. We're also going to be joined by Angel Ellis. She's in a spot where there's not very good telecommunication connectivity, so we're going to hope she joins in just a moment. But Robert Jago, thanks so much for joining us on Juno Afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Where are you right now?
I am in Vancouver with wonderful internet connectivity.
I know. Well, Canada does it right. All those services. Well, tell me a little bit about just the concept of this. I think maybe we are all familiar with the idea. It's kind of like it's an extension of cultural appropriation, I think it's fair to say. And maybe it's the most personal extension of that and the most brazen extension of that. It's people that are trying to co-opt a native background and native heritage into their background, even though they don't really have a legitimate claim to that. Is that sort of the idea?
Yeah, I mean, that's the baseline version of the idea. And there's a lot of people who do it. And for most cases, it's not really that harmful. But then you've got those other cases, you know, I think most people are familiar with Rachel Dolezal, who what used to live in Spokane and was a professor who presented herself as a Black woman in order to get a university job and get all this influence and stuff like that. And what we're seeing with that story, I mean, that when that came out, it was just so surprising because it was so unique. But that's replicated tens of thousands of times for First Nations, for Indigenous peoples.
I would say that, you know, in my generation and in America, I remember Iron Eyes Cody. I mean, that was the person to me that sort of epitomized this. And he in America was part of this Keep America Beautiful campaign that helped clean up mm-hmm. roadside litter and really was a big part of the people's understanding of a new way of taking care of not littering and polluting. And it was really an important part of that, a real milestone in that. But he was Sicilian and Italian. He came from Louisiana mm-hmm. and was not Native American at all, but kind of played that off for his entire career. I guess you could argue that's an example that's maybe not so harmful. I don't know, but it seems all harmful in a funny way. You know, it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's not too many people have been hurt by that Iron Eyes Cody thing other than like, you know, him perpetuating that stereotype of that stoic Indian with all the fancy buckskin clothes and stuff. But I mean, that's certainly a thing. I mean, we talked about him on the podcast, but then we have like people who are running immigration scams based on selling fake Indigenous identity documents, you know, and those. You know, then we've got others, you know, related to people in Congress. You know, there's the brother-in-law of a member of Congress. He pretended to be Native to get federal defense contracts that added up to billions of dollars. We cover one in the first episode of the podcast where, you know, he was convicted of an offense with a minor, you know, some inappropriate things there. And also is currently on trial for fraud.
Wow.
For like millions of dollars of I can't even really say.
But so it ramps up into areas that end up being people making money off of it, people doing it in a way that's hypocritical or spurious. I wanted to play a clip from the podcast in which Angel talks to you a little bit about one that you really personally hit you hard. And it's one that maybe is, you know, sort of trivial, but you can understand that it was a character in a TV show that.
Oh, God.
So I'll play this real quick and I'll just get your reaction to this as we listen to this just about a 2-minute clip here. Hold on 1 second. Here it comes. This is from the podcast Pretendians. And this is a podcast from Canada Land. It's an audience supported independent news podcast company. It consistently produces some of the best audio journalism in Canada. And we're talking to one of the producers and hosts of that, Robert Jago, right now. And Angel Ellis will hopefully join us in a little bit here, too. And that's who you'll hear in just a moment here.
What comes to mind first when you hear the words Hollywood Pretendian?
Ed Chigliak from Northern Exposure.
My uncle won't come in.
Why?
Doesn't like doctors?
He doesn't trust them.
Why's that?
He is a doctor.
Oh, really? Which kind?
Which?
Which?
Which what?
Which doctor?
Right.
Your uncle is a witch doctor?
That one bumped me out so much.
That was like the heartbreaker one for you when you found out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was like, it's this young, funny Native dude who like lives kind of broadly speaking in my region. And he does Native stuff and he's really funny. And he like played Native in a modern way. So it wasn't just a total stereotype. And then it turns out it's like a blonde guy with a tan.
Oh man.
That really bumped me out.
Well, that's a quick clip of that. I kind of feel you, man. Since, you know, you feel like you develop a relationship with these characters, and then it doesn't feel honest anymore.
Yeah, that's the low grade grind of the persistent grind of all the sheer volume pretendians. You know, there's a lot out there, and for the most part, they just grind your soul down a little bit like that one did. That was disappointing. I just think of that episode he had with the tomatoes, and I thought that was the funniest thing. If you know Northern Exposure, there's an episode where he has Rotten Tomatoes, and this is one day out of the year. I think it was Thanksgiving, and all the natives throw tomatoes at non-natives to, you know, because of the genocide.
Of course, those of us in Alaska have a different problem with Northern Exposure. You know, we all filmed in Washington State famously. And, you know, we think, oh, that doesn't represent who we really are. So, yeah, that was show predicated on falsehoods.
It's nesting dolls. It's appropriation all the way down.
Right. Well, give me some more examples. You were about to kind of talk a little bit more about other examples, maybe ones that are more serious or ones that are politically more troublesome. What are some more examples of, and, you know, we don't have to go down a murderer's row list here of egregious examples, but tell me which ones really hit you as.
Well, it is funny that you mentioned murderers. We interview one in the podcast who is a bona fide actual native person. And he's, explaining to us how, the prison system is full of pretendians, of people impersonating indigenous identity in order to get preferential treatment in federal prisons.
Oh, interesting.
So
preferential official treatment.
Yeah, because Canada has affirmative action in the Constitution, so there's a little bit more space there than there is in the States. So that they can actually have special set-aside programs to... The reason for it is because there's a problem of over-incarceration of Indigenous people in the prisons. So there was a federal ruling, and they said, you need to fix this. And the way to fix it is they added special Native programs with, you know, a moose burger, and there's elders that come, and you get your own room. And you go into cultural training. But when you go into cultural training, the problem is that it's full of, in this case we looked at, Hell's Angels, non-native Hell's Angels, to be precise. You know, and so we'll see there a fake elder who's impersonating an Indigenous person is sat around a table with pink chicken feathers from dollar store, making fake dream catchers with a whole bunch of fake pretendians. And the real native prisoners are stuck outside. They can't access the programs. And so they're stuck doing hard time.
Wow.
Well, you know, these actual guys, the Hell's Angels in that case, get out early.
Wow.
You know, I mean, the guy we looked at was, his initial charges were, I think, 27 counts of murder. It was
a bad guy. Yeah.
Pretty bad dude. Yeah.
Pretty bad dude. Wow. Really.
14 years and he's out on the street though.
Now,
thanks to the Native program.
This also goes, that's one extreme example, of course, but this also goes on maybe the other example of power in America to elected representatives as well.
Yeah. I mean, definitely in Canada, there's a whole bunch in the parliament in the States. Very disappointingly, you have the first card-carrying tribal citizen elected as a governor, and that's Kevin Stitt in Oklahoma, who, you know, when we dig into it, we find out that not only were his ancestors pretendians, but they were famous for being pretendians. You know, there were a whole bunch of court cases. There was a whole bunch of like news articles and court cases and everything about trying to get them kicked off the rolls of the Cherokee Nation back at the turn of the last century. But, you know, they weren't successful. They stayed on the rolls, and he, you know, inherited a whole bunch of land and parlayed that into a business empire. And now he's governor, and he spends most of his time attacking the tribes.
Does he still put forward that he's of Native heritage, or has he?
He's definitely a citizen. He still claims that he has Native heritage. He disputes the claim that he's not actually Cherokee. That his family bribed their way onto the tribal rolls.
Wow. Let's talk Hollywood. Let's talk about some examples in Hollywood. What do you see as ones that maybe either would just need to be called to attention or that might surprise people?
there's a whole bunch that people whisper about, you know, in shows like, I don't know, Yellowstone. But we didn't look into those. We looked at, I guess the most famous case is Johnny Depp, who has claimed a bunch of different tribes, and was, you know, he famously played Tonto.
Yes.
And
not a very good turn for him though. Tonto, not too well received. Yeah. Not,
I mean, you know what Tonto means, right?
No.
It's Spanish for a fool.
Oh,
So, I mean, the character even has an offensive name.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, he played a couple other native characters as well, including in a secret movie of Johnny Depp's, which you can't find on any streaming service and was never released in the Americas, called The Brave. Only available in Europe. It is the most horrible movie you will ever see.
That is a big claim.
It's Rotten Tomato rating is like an old fish wrapper. It is zero. It is literally abysmal.
Well, tell me a little bit about your process. It occurs to me that you not only are discussing on this podcast cases that are kind of well known and famous and like, let's look into that, but you're actually sort of investigating a little bit and looking into, tell me about your process. What's the investigative part of it, and how do you go about looking into this?
Sure. So a lot of pretendian stories that you'll see in the newspapers and in the news, it's like a dog chasing cars, right? You know, they'll just go, no matter what the car is, they'll go after it. And I don't see too much value in that. What I want to do with each of these stories is highlight a major societal or government problem that can be fixed. And so we choose a couple cases where we could really demonstrate that very clearly without having to explain a million new terms. And then we speak to reporters, FOIA requests or ATIP requests, freedom of information requests. We network through the criminal underground somehow. I didn't know I could do that. And sometimes people just call us out of the blue because a good number of pretendians are major narcissists.
The type of people that, yeah, people aren't too sad to see maybe have a step down a couple notches. Yeah,
they think they're going to sound great on tape. So they say, oh, yeah, I would love to do an interview. Let's get this done.
It's amazing to me. It's the old 60 Minutes thing of like, why would that person go on? Why would that person be interviewed? And it's like, well, because they really have a high opinion of themselves.
I know, right? Like, I'm going to outsmart Mike Wallace and Barbara Walters. Right. You are not.
They won't use that extreme close-up on me.
Yes, exactly.
Right. Well, can you tell me a little bit more about Canada Land, this organization that distributes your podcast?
Yeah, sure. Canada Land is a podcast network in Canada. They've got a whole bunch of different shows. I think the new show that just came out is The Field Guide to Gay Animals. So if you're interested in that, yeah. I think it was just premiered at Tribeca, the Tribeca Festival. There's a bunch that have like a broader interest like that. And it has an unusually high number or high percentage of Indigenous programming. So even like our executive producer is you know, in import from APTN, the Aboriginal People's Television Network in Canada. And she's Indigenous. So it has a good Indigenous voice. So if you want to go on there, Field Guide to Gay Animals is there. That's broad appeal. We're pretendians. There's another one called Canada Land Back. There's another one called Thunder Bay. So there's a lot there.
Okay. Well, that's really cool. It's really interesting to hear about a network like that that's supporting these kinds of really cool programs. So tell me a little bit about how you think is this phenomenon growing? Or do you think it's waning in the face of people sort of understanding that this is not a cool thing to do? Or, you know,
it has been growing up until recent years. So if you look at the U.S. census, the indigenous population, I think, tripled over a census. In Canada, it's increased by maybe 50% over the last couple of censuses. And that's not our fault. You know, we're not playing a lot of Barry White. It's really pretendians.
Yeah. Interesting. So, and that's just like in the census, for instance, you're just saying, they're just asking and you're just, there's no proof. There's no vetting that information. Yeah.
No, it's a TikTok phenomenon, I think. But you know, in our last episode, we talked to some people who just regular people who are in the process of becoming pretendians or would have been in the process of becoming pretendians. They have these old family stories and they're kind of like one of them lived in a teepee. And then they take a DNA test. They realize it's all false. And then we explore with them how they deal with that. And the takeaway for me from that episode is that 100% of them, and we talked to a lot of people, 100% of them are aware of what a pretendian is, are aware that it's wrong to be one, and are being very cautious and much more careful in how they approach these things now.
Well, it's fascinating, isn't it? There's so many layers to why someone would want to go down that road. But as you say, I'm sure there's many, many people that kind of like, quote unquote, innocently get caught up in, you know, their grandmother told a story. They always heard this thing, or there was some tradition in their family and it led them to believe that they were, you know, that they were of a certain heritage.
Native people have this too, right? Like everyone has some story, like so-and-so is this chief or something. And in my family, we have a story that some relative going six generations back was a prince in Hawaii or something like that. And, you know, we dig into it and it's like, yeah, he was Hawaiian, but he just worked in the royal palace. He wasn't like a prince.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, the royal toilet scrubber. I don't know.
Well, that's something. That's not nothing. But
it is a throne.
It is a throne. Throne's a throne. It's a throne after all. Well, and it's really interesting what you say. I mean, I do think, boy, the DNA testing must be really a revolutionary part of all this.
Well, yeah, but I mean, we need to be careful with that. The only thing a DNA test can tell you with regards to Indigenous identity is if you're not Native. It can't tell you that you are Native. You know, I mean, there was a show, I can't remember, it was an American show, it was an American talk show. And during the talk show, he would bring on celebrities and do their DNA tests and like surprise them. And there's this one episode where he brought on, who made Seinfeld? The other guy.
Larry David. This is the Robert Gates show that's on PBS, I believe they're talking about.
Oh, no, this is a Mexican-American comedian.
Oh, okay. All right. Fine.
Yeah, no, this is
George Lopez. George
Lopez.
That's it.
Yeah,
okay.
It's George Lopez. Yes, this is a George Lopez quote clip. Look for it on YouTube with Larry David. He brings him on and he gives him his DNA test and he's like 45% Native American. But he's not, and he's like, I'm an Indian. But he's not. I mean, he's not really actually
Native. That was a good Larry David you just did there, by the way.
Thank you very much.
But that's interesting. You're right. It doesn't tell, it can only tell you empirically if you are not. It can't tell you empirically if you are. And that's an interesting point to be made. Yeah. Well, Robert, thanks so much for kind of just giving us a brief preview of this really fascinating podcast, Pretendians. It can be found on Canada Land. And I'm sure if you're, you know, just go to any podcast service and type in Pretendians, which is spelt just like it sounds, Pretendians. You'll be able to find the podcast with Angel Ellis as one of the hosts and Robert Jago, who we've been talking to as the other host. Robert, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And it's really wonderful to talk to you. And what a fascinating and fun sounding podcast you've got going there. Congratulations on the success of it. And thanks again for joining us all the way from BC. Appreciate it.
Thanks. So far.
Okay.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
You sang your poem right off of the page. Outside.
outside, the storm held its fury and its rage, and the snowflakes blew all around, and the deep snow covered bare ground. As you staggered on the stage and you turned another page, your life would unfold for this audience to behold. God, I fought back the tears as you unrolled the years on the drinking and the abuse, and the light came shining from your soul. You were a young man, but your words were so old. Young raven, come spread out your wings and fly in the warmth of the sun. Young raven, come spread out your wings and see what your young life's become. You continued your poem under fluorescent lights, talked about the head-on collision that almost took your life, how you went through the windshield of that fast-speeding car, and at that moment you were reborn into who you now are. As you peeled off your words from the page, and outside the storm still held its rage. Young raven, come spread out your wings and fly in the warmth of the sun. Young raven, come spread out your wings and see what your young life's done. Your speech slurred the words from the metal plate in your head. You thanked that doctor that you were not dead, even though it took his knife to save your life. And you hugged him with the one arm you had left, for you'd learned to love the gift of life the best. Young raven, come spread out your wings and fly in the warmth of the sun. Young raven, come spread out.
That's more music from Buddy Tabor from Earth and Sky. That's an album that's been re-released. 2012 was the original release, I believe, of that, and now it's been re-released. That's Raven with a Broken Wing, and all that great Buddy Tabor music's now available on your favorite streaming service, so go check it out. Buddy Tabor, go do the search, and you'll find these new re-releases all getting out there. Well, let's talk next to someone from Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on community-supported KTOO, and joining me now is Christy Ford. She's the Education Director at Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, and Christy, thanks for coming.
Hi, Andy. Thanks for inviting us.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got a couple of things to talk about, but let's first and foremost talk about this really cool new tool, toy, fun thing, cool thing that's available that I'm sure is the culmination of decades of work, really cumulative work. And it's a multilingual library that's now available that's an audio library online that's done through the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. Tell me a little bit about everything that people can find on there, the types of things people can find on there.
Absolutely. And so you kind of like laid it out for me.
I talked for a while there. Yeah,
you laid it out really well for me. And so I'll just, you know, put out there for the listeners. Ever since SHI became a nonprofit, you know, back in 1980. So for 44 years, SHI has made it a priority to support the revitalization and documentation of the three different Indigenous languages of Southeast Alaska, Tlingit, Haida, and I should say Tlingit, Hudkil, and Shmelgik.
I heard that today when I was on there. I put in Tsimshian, and I heard the correct Tsimshian pronunciation of Tsimshian, which was really exciting.
And that's for Haida and Shmelgik, they're when you're referring to the language, it's Hudkil and Tsimshian. So ever since its inception 44 years ago, we've been documenting, we've been working with linguists, language speakers to create orthographies, dictionaries. You know, we've been working on various other resources like flashcards and videos. We have all these apps available online. We have podcasts. We have games.
I was telling Boston before you came in that one of the first things I did when I moved to Juneau, Alaska in 1991, was I got to work with Richard and Nora Dauenhauer on Beginning Tlingit. And Gary Wade also was doing a lot of the audio work. So I got to sit in a studio. You talk about an amazing immersion experience for someone who just moved to Alaska, to be able to sit in a studio and listen to them recite phrases and words in Tlingit and record it. It was wonderful. And it made me just fall in love with the idea that there was this beautiful language and heritage that was here that was unique to this area.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, Richard and Nora worked with SHI a lot on a lot of the documentation. And so we have, I think, 5 different books put together along the Raven stories and different documentations of oral histories. And so through all this culmination of work that SHI has done, we have a little bit here and a little bit there, and especially within our apps. So what we did was we said, well, how do we create, if you don't have an app or you don't have a device, how do we create something where you can just go in and search a database, which in at whichever 3 languages you want, and find the word spelled out for you and an audio clip of that word?
It's amazing. You know, let's do it.
Let's do it.
I'm just thinking, like, I just thought of the word like ocean.
Okay.
Let's put in ocean. I'm typing it in. This is on the SeaAlaskaHeritage.org website. You type that in, and then you just an easy, you know, search box. And I'm clicking on Tlingit, and I says, "Oh, so on Tlingit," and then I type in ocean, and then I hit the search, and it comes up with ocean. Let's listen.
H.
And it's spelled out as well. Mm-hmm. And then this is deep ocean.
Katlani 18.
That sounded like Paul Marx at the beginning there. Was that Paul? Maybe. Not sure.
I'm
okay.
Not sure.
And then this is an ocean creature. So this kind of came up in the search because ocean was in the phrase. And mm-hmm. This is for a skate, which is, as we all know, kind of an ocean, like a stingray.
Cheat-ga.
Chitga.
Chitga.
Spelled out as well. Now let's see if we can find that with Haida. So you're able to click on the language at the top, and then you're in that kind of database, and then you search for that word, and here it is.
Sea.
Say that. Do that one more time.
Ocean is
in
sea.
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 You know, what's really interesting,
really
Andy,
cool.
Yeah. And so right now we have 50 different categories set up for Tlingit. We have about 40 categories set up for Hudkill. And we have about, I think, 30 categories set up for Shimalgik. And the really incredible thing is that as we are continuously working with our language speakers, we're continuously pulling out new words as we're doing new publications, and the staff on SHI end is constantly uploading. And so we're constantly adding more words to that dictionary, and that will be the database available.
That's so cool. Yeah.
One of the really cool things that came about this, and just thinking about what we all came through with COVID and education and online learning, when I was working with a lot of teachers during COVID of how do we make language accessible? How do we, you know, kids are at home with their Chromebooks. Their Chromebooks might not have the apps on them. So then how do we make sure students can hear the words if we're trying to teach them? And it was just like, that is what we need to do. We need to make sure it's accessible regardless of what platform you're using, regardless if you have an app or not an app. And so the online dictionary was the like natural progression of what we needed to do next to make the language more accessible and keep building up that database.
Yeah. Is one of these more fleshed out and full than the others as far as languages go? Is Tlingit, for instance, a little bit more entries in that, or, you know,
we have a little bit more entries in Tlingit, and we're working hard to really continuously build up Hudkill and Shimalgik at the same time.
Yeah.
We have an incredible group of language learners that work with us, that help us keep building up those words, who work with us on new resources. You know, one of the other things that we also recently put out was a picture dictionary. And so thinking about like young learners, thinking about literature, thinking about books. So we published picture dictionaries in the three languages. And so right now we're working on volume two of those picture dictionaries. And so we're coming up with a whole new batch of words that will be published in volume two of the picture dictionaries and will be uploaded into our new database.
I mean, there's nothing when you're learning a language or you're trying to understand a language, there's nothing like actually speaking to someone. But boy, this is kind of the next best thing in a way. You're actually able to hear the words, able to hear really the correct way that people are saying it. It's such a, you can see it as such an additional tool and for people who are kind of going through this process of trying to connect to this ancient language or all three of them.
And it's, I think what's really neat is when you're in the grocery store and you hear the language being spoken, then you know that like the impact is happening. And you know, right now SHI has been working in partnership with the University of Alaska Southeast, and there's the free language classes that are being offered out there. And so we saw a 300% increase in the number of students that were taking language classes simply by making sure we had options for free, non-credit classes. And so coming back to walking around the community and being in the grocery store, being out on the street, having someone respond to you and Tlingit, it's like, it feels like, yes, this is the right language to be heard here in Southeast.
I had that experience in the YK Delta region where Yupik is still very commonly heard, especially among elders. But going through some of the same things as, you know, this, as fewer and fewer people seem to be carrying it around as the language that they're using in their home and that sort of thing. But yeah, I think you're right. So right. Paul Marks was an example of a friend of mine who, when we're playing basketball, every now and then he'll say, he'll use a Tlingit term to describe whatever bad play I just made, you know, and that's, it's a really an amazing experience. You know?
He'll tease you a little bit. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's really good. Well, that is an amazing resource. Again, it's sealaskaheritage.org. I think from there you could probably hit it on the menu or whatever or that kind of thing. There's kind of a longer URL that I won't repeat here, but it's essentially under the audio dictionary URL. But if you go to sealaskaheritage.org, you'll be able to find this really incredible tool. And you were saying that also, just as a quick preview too, there's a conference coming up in August you want to make sure people are aware of.
Oh, thanks, Andy.
Yeah.
So we, SHI, host our annual Culturally Responsive Education Conference. It's called Our Cultural Landscapes. It's annual, and this year it's happening August 7th through the 9th. And so the strands that will be available for people are an Indigenous science strand. We'll have a language revitalization strand, we'll have a literacy strand, and then we'll have a general culturally responsive education strand. Our registration link is live, and so I really want to encourage you, your listeners. The conference will be live out at UAS, is hosting the conference, but we will also have some hybrid offerings as well if you need to zoom into the conference. But it's live. Registration is live. We're really hoping people go online, sign up. It is for free. It's no cost to a participant to come and join us and learn. So if you're a language learner, you want to learn more about Indigenous science, culturally responsive education, we welcome everyone. So you don't just have to be a teacher to come and join us. So
yeah, really.
Please
cool.
Check it out, sealaskaheritage.org.
And then just a few final words on this really cool new thing that's happening that's now online, this multilingual library. We covered a little bit about the history of it, but what's your hope for the future of it, the future use of it, what are some of the things you're thinking this is going to be used in or the forms it's going to be used in?
Well, you know, I come from an education background, so my hope is that teachers can take this and they can download the audio bites, they can upload it into their lesson plans, they can push it out to students as individual lessons. My hope is that people from all over, regardless of where you live, you have access to this language. And most importantly, that we keep building the database as the words and the audio clips become available. But my hope is it really gets integrated into things, the downloads, the uploads into lessons, uploads into student produced materials.
It's exciting to think of this as the launch, but it's just the start.
Yeah.
In a way of building this out, as we can remember when Wikipedia went online or something, it was a start, but like gets added to and added to, and the Alaska Heritage Institute has a commitment to continue to add to this. That's a really exciting thing.
Thanks, well, Andy.
Yeah. Thank you, Christy, so much. Christy Ford as education director for the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. I thought I would, on the way out, play this. Thank you for coming. All right. And then thank you all for coming. All right. Thank you so much. And thank you, Christy. It was great to talk to you about this. Thank you so much. Here's a little bit more from the cover track of Earth and Sky from Buddy Tabor.
Searching for the truth, searching for the truth in a world full of lies. Young poet, got no excuses, got no excuses, got no alibis. All we got left of you are these teardrops in our eyes. Earth in the sky, earth in the sky, the earth in the sky. Nothing lasts forever but the earth and the sky. Love the mountains, you love the sea, like endless lines of poetry. So saddle your daddy's horses one more time. Ride that painted mare across a great divide. Earth in the sky, earth in the sky, earth in the sky. Nothing lasts forever but the earth and the sky. Lives are like the flowers of the field, they bloom, the seasons change, the wind blows, and then one day we're gone. Nobody knows exactly just how long. Earth in the sky, earth in the sky, earth in the sky. Nothing lasts forever but the earth and the sky. Embrace the unexpected of life's great mystery. Standing in acceptance, it's then we are set free. Free to love you through our pain. Free to love you through our tears. Free to love you with the passing of our years. Earth in the sky, earth in the sky, earth in the sky. Nothing lasts forever but the earth and the sky.
Well, that's more from Buddy Tabor. That's Earth and the Sky, and that's a title track of that re-released album that you can find now on streaming services across the globe. Let's just say it. Let's just say across the globe. Hey, Mom's Unhinged stand-up comedy. That's a national act that is here in Juneau tonight.
Yeah.
And we've got them here in with us right now. Andrea and Nancy, Andrea Vall and Nancy Norton are here. Stand-up comedians. Are you guys Denver-based? Kind of, is that right?
Yeah, we're Colorado-based. We are starting to pull comedians from all over the country, though. But we started in Colorado, started selling out shows in Colorado, started taking the act national. And as we've done that, we've connected with comedians all over the country, and we're performing all over the country. So it's so fun.
That's really awesome. We're saying, like, you know, it's so cool that, like, you're doing it, mm-hmm. right? You're like, you're comedian. You're comedians. You're working comedians.
I've like, been a comedian.
Right. It's
I've been
incredible.
A comedian for 35 years.
Yeah.
So I just joined this group not that long ago, but I've been a touring comedian for over, I'm Nancy Norton, yeah. by the way. I've been a comedian for over 35
so
years.
So what goes into, like, what, tell me the highs and lows and what's gone into it and where did yeah. you start? And
yeah.
are you from Boston like every other comedian?
well, Nancy is the first female to win the Boston Comedy Festival, and she won the Seattle Comedy Festival. She's been doing it like
a pro.
She's a pro.
I've had a few TV spots and things yeah. like that. Yeah. And I mean, I still love it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And you knew I was older. My name is Nancy.
Well, my mom's name.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Sorry. I mean,
no, dude.
Lovely
I mean,
woman.
They haven't made a Nancy since 1964.
That's when I was born. Sad.
So you're post Nancy.
I am. I'm post Nancy era.
Yeah, the Andes are after the Nancy.
Well, tell me about just to start with you, Nancy. How did it start for you? How did the comedy start for you? Were you doing bits in high school and went on or what?
Yes, I was the class clown, and I always wanted to do stand up since I was 4 years old. But what gave me the courage and the call was when she knows I'm telling a long story. She's going to take a photo.
There we go. Settle in.
She's like, yeah, buckle up, folks. Old Nancy. Old Grandma Nancy is going to tell a story.
Jumping Jehoshaphat's back in the day when I was born.
But seriously, it was when I was working hospice nursing.
Oh,
and
amazing.
I was living in Hawaii at the time. And that is what gave me the call because I started helping people through the dying process in my 20s. And I'm like, oh, man, I'm going to die. Like, my mortality hit me head on. And I'm like, I am going to die. And I was watching people who died with peace. And I asked them, how did you get to that? How did you get to that peaceful place? Because I would like to die with peace. And they said, honey, I just live my dreams. I honored my heart. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have got to honor my heart's desire. I always wanted to be a stand-up.
Well, that is a unique origin story for a stand-up comic that I've never heard. It all happened in hospice. I mean, that's an amazing.
It really did.
Incredible.
This made the hair stand up on my neck. That night, I went home after that epiphany. I turned on the TV and it was an episode of a rerun of Mary Tyler Moore where somebody always wanted to do stand-up. And guess what? The next thing, a commercial. Do you think you're funny? You want to try stand up?
What?
Enter this. This is all true.
Wow.
This contest at the Honolulu Comedy Club tonight. And I just, the hair stood up on my neck. It was back in the day when you had to fill out a postcard, send it in. And dude, I went and I did a 2-minute contest and the owner hired me
wow.
that night. He's like, you're funny. You want to work here?
What were your first bits?
I'll tell you. I remember it clearly. Okay, because I had severe stage fright. Andy,
yeah.
like my you know, I had one of those voices that was shaky when I was on stage. My mouth was dry. My knees were shaking. So I wrote a 2-minute bit, and I don't know where it all came from. It just came. I put a flashlight on my microwave, hit standby 2 minutes. And I was doing nurses charting in military time. So this joke came to me, which I'm already telegraphing the punchline. But it was like, I was like a postmenopausal smoker. So I disguised my voice and I was like, my name's Velma and I'm an alcoholic. I have not had a drink since 1955. That's just 5 till 8 in military time. That's still pretty good. And I was
Honolulu crowd, military crowd, right?
Yeah. Mostly our crowds were tourists.
So
Hawaii, but we did have some military. But that was my first joke I ever wrote. That's it.
Hey, I got another joke of yours queued up here. Let's just play this one. Let's see. We got this one here. Now, I thought this was pretty good. This is good old school humor right here.
Yeah.
Let's hear another joke coming here from Nancy Norton, who's the featured performer tonight on Mom's Unhinged Stand-Up Comedy. And Andrew, we're going to talk to you next.
All right.
Tell me if you think this would be funny. If I prayed to God to fix my lazy eye and God said, I don't know, are you talking to me or...
That's just trying out the new stuff on the crowd.
Andy, and you will validate that I, in fact, do
sure.
have a lazy. You can see my right eye is drifting.
Yeah, being comfortable with medical kind of stuff is, you know, that's
yeah.
part of being a nurse. Yeah,
and well,
right.
of course, I don't know if you've ever tried to recap a needle with a lazy eye, but that is ow, ow, ow.
Wow.
Missed the. Okay, I'm not going to do all my bits. doing all the hits, right. Andrea. I know. But the last thing I want to say about that is I have a podcast called Traumedy, Coping with Your Pain Using, you know, Comedy. So it's spelled Traumedy. But anyway, that's an example of Traumedy because it is painful to have a disfigurement, like an eye misalignment, and people literally do not know I'm talking to them. So they will. They'll look over their shoulder.
I'm glad you're letting me. You're allowing me to laugh a little
bit. That's it. I encourage you to laugh with me because it's otherwise I'll cry.
Right. What are you going
to
do? Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Andrew,
play with your pain.
Let's talk about
Andrea.
This is such a cool thing. So you've come up with this idea of Moms Unhinged. You're the founder of this idea.
Yeah.
Brought a few different comedians together to kind of bring this thing. So tell, what was the kind of origin of that idea?
Right, right. So what happens for women in comedy is that we often don't get the same opportunities that men get to be on shows. It's kind of the token female. And so I thought, you know what, let's do an all women comedy show, Moms Unhinged. Yeah, and I wrote, when I started comedy, I started much later than Nancy. I just started when I was about 40. And I started talking about my, you know, failings as a mom and my midlife crisis. And so I decided to monetize that and did and went into comedy. And so I thought, let's do an all mom show. And we started doing it. We started selling out and we kept selling out. And I was like, this is fun. And then post COVID, I was like, God, let's just do more of that. That was really fun. And so we did more and more. And I was like, let's try and break it. And we were just doing more shows and they all were selling out. And I said, this is great. Wouldn't it be amazing if I could just do this full time?
Let's take
this
act on the road. Yeah.
And it's been really, really fun. And occasionally we will have a token dad on the lineup, but we do pay him 80 cents on the dollar.
That's good.
Boom, folks.
Deserve it.
These are some of the funnest shows. I've been doing this, like I say, a really long time. And getting in front of a group of moms where we already get each other and we already know we're funny. You know, because sometimes you have to prove to audiences that a woman can be funny. A lot of people have that misconception that, oh, women aren't funny. But when you get in front of a group of women who already know women are funny, it's so much easier.
Or there's a certain role.
Takes it to another level.
A certain role that a woman comedian needs to fill. Or that, you know, like there's that kind of thing too, right? There's a certain
like getting in that little
preconceived notion of like, well, this is that kind of a comic versus just like broad based doing whatever doing whatever comes and right.
Thanks for acknowledging.
And I will say that men are welcome at our shows too. They often really enjoy it. You know, they come up to us afterwards. They're like, I was expecting to be picked on. We do not pick on men. They're going into an uncomfortable situation. Right there, room full. They're usually about 5% of the whole audience is men.
Although even worse, we might ignore you.
But I know. So it's uncomfortable.
Watch that ego. They don't do well with that.
We welcome anyone, and it's fun because we're really talking about what it's like to be a human. It's what parenting, of course, but also just like how difficult it is to be a human in this world, and just challenges. And we do very personal comedy. It's cleanish. We will push the boundaries a little bit, but it's cleanish.
Do you feel that it's an interesting thing to think about. Do you feel that women have a higher comfort level kind of attending your show, or they kind of,
That's the other thing too.
A lot of comedy shows can be a little crass.
A lot of vulgar
and especially male-based ones are kind of,
lot of dick jokes, and that's just Nancy.
We guy named Richard. We're talking about
we work cleanish, and then she says dick jokes on NPR.
I know, right? Dang it!
This is NPR. Shoot. You don't do that. Here.
I'm so sorry, Richard.
Richard.
I'm so sorry,
Andrea.
Pushing the boundaries. I'm so sorry.
But I do think the comfort level for women might be there for women who don't attend comedy shows a ton.
Exactly.
Right. And you're not going to be the target. You're going to be uplifted rather than punched down on. You know what I mean?
Because
that's a term we use in stand-up a lot these days. I don't know. I'm sure you're familiar with punching up and punching down.
Yeah, right.
But, there's something that is still being done is punching down on women or marginalized people. And that's not what we do. And our intention really is to connect and uplift.
Yeah, exactly.
And also just you know, acknowledge. That's why it's called unhinged. Like, you will be hearing me acknowledge my parenting foibles. And, you know, going through, I went through menopause. I'm 44 years older than my son. You know, his first words were hot flash. So I'm doing all my hits. You know?
That's a good one. Yeah, don't use all the materials.
They'll forget it by tonight.
Yeah, so good.
Right. Listen, a couple drinks in.
Yeah. Oh, let's hear that one again. But yes, it's, so I had to end up going. I mean, I was reactive with my son sometimes, and I have to acknowledge that and just say, we got to forgive ourselves. We got to be compassionate with ourselves as parents, because none of us are perfect. And a lot of us do. Like, there's some things I'm ashamed of as a parent. And I just want you to know, you're not alone.
Well, that's cool. You know, you go to comedy shows to feel good.
Right.
You don't go to comedy shows. The punching down thing, I think, is a really interesting thing, right? Because it's, I think from comics, they would say that's number one, it's easy. But then secondly, you're tapping into a negative thing. It's a response that people are laughing, but it's about a negative thing when
and
you're punching down.
And it's perpetuating an old thing.
Yeah. And so why not go this other direction? And like at the end of the night, you walk out, you feel clean.
Mm-hmm.
You feel like, that was nice. That was fun. I'm happy.
I've spent the last 3 years in a program at the Association of Applied and Therapeutic Humor, where I am certified as a humor professional in therapeutic humor. So there's peer-reviewed studies, and there's affiliative humor, and there's aggressive humor. And affiliative brings us together, lifts us up. Aggressive is divisive and puts one person up and one person down. And so what we want to do is affiliative humor. And that has been proven. Why I do the nurses shows is to get rid of vicarious trauma that's trapped in your body, the stress hormones.
Wow. Yeah.
When you laugh, you actually get rid of stress hormones.
Utterly. I believe that.
You can
completely
feel it. Yeah. You can do your own anecdotal evidence of one.
Yeah. Or I make myself laugh all the time.
Because you need it. Because you have stress and you need it.
Yeah. Hey, we should first and foremost mention this is all happening at Centennial Hall. It's tonight at 7. And there is this bonus show of the Nurses Off the Charts, right?
Yes, at 10 p.m.
Okay.
And it's called Nurses Off the Charts, and all are welcome. I mean, specifically, healthcare humor will be the main course, but we also invite audience members to share their own funny stories. And it can be as a patient, as a nurse, as a healthcare provider of any kind. So those are a lot of fun. Peer-to-peer sharing is the best.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I mean, you must get invited to hospitals and to things like that, right? You must do, those are the corporate shows you must do, right?
I do a lot. I do keynote presentations called The Power of Humor. And it applies to everybody and how it does actually help you stay healthy.
Yeah.
It boosts your immunity, folks.
Yeah.
Boosts your immunity when you laugh. Actually.
It's cool to think about how that's a way that you can make comedy your career as well, right? You kind of work it into, there's this even therapeutic ways to kind of talk about comedy and to talk about.
And because I'm a fifth generation nurse and it's imprinted on me to be a healer, I can
fifth
still,
generation nurse.
Yeah.
Wow.
And before that, we were witches.
Yeah.
And
that's,
so,
yeah.
Good.
Nancy
we
Nightingale
light.
Over here. Yeah.
We were light witches. But we, well, my joke is I got out of healthcare for the same reason a lot of people get into it. To save lives.
Oh, yeah.
but I'm saving lives with humor now. So it is still a calling. And that's what Andrea's doing too with the moms. We are lifting each other up. We're giving each other resilience, and humor actually is healing. So we're here to heal.
And then is Jen Yee also a part of the act as well tonight?
Jen Yee is the reason we're here.
This is kind of a fun thing that we've been doing is that when any of our moms like are going somewhere, she was coming here on vacation. She has a friend here, and then some of her friends were also coming here, and she said, "Hey, I'm going to be in Juneau these dates." And she found Centennial Hall and said, "Hey, should we do a show here?"
Great.
And I was like, "Let's do it." And so we came out and are doing the show, and we've just had an amazing time in Juneau. It's so beautiful.
Well,
oh, my gosh.
Wales.
We're so glad to have you. You got some good weather. That's great, too. Listen, it's Moms Unhinged. It's a stand-up comedy show happening tonight with Nurses Off the Charts as the bonus little secret. Is there a Is there like a secret phrase they have to say?
There's a combo package.
Combo package. All right. Very good. And it's Andrea Vall, Nancy Norton, who we've been talking to. Jen Yee is also going to be on as well. And Marie, is there a Marie?
That's Andrea Marie. That's also me. I have two names.
Sorry. Okay. That's your stage name. Well, thanks so much for talking to us. It's wonderful to have you in town. Thanks for coming to town. It's going to be a great night over at Centennial Hall. It all starts tonight at 7 o'clock. And we're going to get off the air right now. Thanks to both of you for coming.
Andy.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone. That's Juno Afternoon for today. I'm Andy Klein, your host, and have a great weekend.